did you say we were recording if we weren't recording?
Because I thought we were recording, but it turns out we're not recording. But now we are in fact recording. So welcome to Mustard AMAs. I am Richard.
And I am Matt. And let me point out, I haven't had the mic facing the wrong way, I think, ever. I think that was you that had the mic turned the wrong way that one time.
That's entirely and always my problem.
And that's fine. And we should check to make sure. It's good to double check. I should also mention, I'm a little more tired than normal because we're doing this at night. We're also doing this later than planned because someone said they'd be leaving Ballard a lot earlier than actually happened.
I'm sorry. I did my best. All right. I'm here. What can I say?
Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I'm Matt.
And I am Richard.
I think you already said your name. I apologize for throwing off the rhythm. I had to get that Ballard thing off my chest. We are doing the, a lot of time has passed. Over a week.
Somebody went on vacation.
I was in Hawaii. I did not bring my laptop, a mic, and Skype.
Yeah, that would have been cool. We should have tried that.
No, really, we shouldn't have.
It would have been cool to talk to you from Hawaii, though.
So. That's okay. Maybe next tropical vacation.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff has gone on since then. The day before I get on the plane, Friday or Saturday morning, Friday after work, I go watch United 93.
Oh, perfect. Perfect thing to have in your mind as you're going to
fly. Mainly because I knew when I got back, I'd have to see Mission Impossible 3, and I didn't want to try and cram. Anyway, so
what did you think of United 93?
I quite liked it. Was not a crowded theater at all.
It did pretty well, all things considered. It made probably like 10 million its first week out.
30 or 40 people, and this was about a 5 o'clock showing, I think.
Yep.
There was a news truck in the parking lot, and I was kind of like, oh, are they interviewing people about this? But yeah. I think maybe they were just there because of the altitude. They could beam the signal back to the station, so might not have had anything to do with it. Anyway, I really enjoyed the film. I was surprised by a couple of things. I was expecting to cry. I didn't cry. I got close when people are calling their family members and leaving messages on machines. That kind of got me.
Well, it was done really documentary. Like, it was not the visual cues. Things were, they didn't build things up. There was music, but it was muted. And it was, so there was not a lot of the stuff that normally leads you to, oh, now's my time to cry. Now's my time to go. Yeah. I mean, even pointedly, the guy who said, let's roll, the famous let's roll Scott or Beeman or whatever his name was, Beamer, even that one was just barely in a thought. Some guy, okay, let's roll. And that was it. And honestly, that's probably exactly what happened, but you've so built it up in your mind that the movie was remarkable for treating it as probably as close to actuality as it could possibly get.
You know, and it depicts a lot of confusion about the military needing authorization and who's in command, and we need someone to make a decision, and the fact that there's two jets guarding the East Coast.
Yeah.
You know, you always kind of assume there's a little more than that.
Yeah.
Not expecting to be invaded tomorrow, but you kind of think maybe there's more than a couple of jets that weren't armed.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. One of the jets that they were scrambling wasn't armed. It wasn't clear if that was one of the defense aircraft or not. But
well, you know what? The movie was so matter of fact about how they portrayed stuff that it took me a while till later to read a little bit more to realize, oh, they're actually showing a government that is woefully unprepared. And it was sort of evident there, but there was very specific stuff, like you're saying there, that I was just sort of caught up in the, oh, dang, they don't have a jets and what's going on. And it was only later I was going, wow, how pathetic is that, that this wasn't here? Because the movie was a real slice of life that didn't really hammer it over the head. This is why America was screwed up here, or this is where things were good or whatever. I found it really interesting that it's like a movie that took less sides than any other movie I've ever seen ever.
Well, and it's certainly almost everybody, you know, sort of the worker level.
Yeah.
Everyone did their jobs well. It's when they started needing decisions from upper management that things started falling apart.
Yeah.
And that things didn't happen. And so I come out of that movie and I walk into the lobby and I'm thinking, and there's other people in the lobby laughing and carrying on. And you're just like, how can you be laughing after that? And they didn't come out of that. Out of United 93, they're there to see something completely different, Scary Movie 4 or something.
Yeah.
And you come out of United 93 and you're just, how dare you enjoy anything right now?
So, of course, you would have punched me when I walked out because I, obviously a way to relieve tension, but when I walked out, I was with our other buddy, Mark, and I said, you know, that was kind of a good movie and all, but totally unrealistic. I mean, that could never happen.
I don't think I would have punched you, but I would have glared.
It was a stupid, stupid joke, but it was obviously, it was a very emotional thing that you're looking for something to relieve it. And he laughed. He didn't punch me, but I felt sick for making the statement.
I probably gritted my, you know, gritted my teeth quite a bit. And I kept thinking my pet goat over my head. My pet goat.
Yeah, when they were at, you know, when they were going on at the beginning and they're making all these decisions, I was thinking that same thing. I was thinking those 9 minutes or whatever that Michael Moore talked about. You know, it was like he, all this is going on and he's, and I just picturing, I wish they had put him in like a little picture of Bush in the corner, but
little too political.
The movie definitely showed that Paul Greengrass is as good as it gets for this kind of thing. When you had this and Bloody Sunday together and a lot of the Bourne Supremacy or whatever the second one was, I mean, the guy is just the director du jour. I mean, he is really good.
Well, he's very skilled.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one thing that he's done, but that he did both with this film and Bloody Sunday, very long takes, like a 20 or 30 minute long take where things just roll.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you do a couple of those or you just, you let it happen.
Yeah.
And that's a very unique way of doing it. And I think it's really, it's working well for him.
Yeah.
So then I come back and, the day after I get back, Mission Impossible 3.
Oh yeah. So I haven't seen that yet. What'd you think?
You haven't seen it yet. I thought we'd,
no, I was all caught to see. I just,
one of the reasons I had to see Bloody or United 93 was because I could see Mission Impossible and then I'd be all caught up and we would talk about it.
Dude, I'm so, you know, I had to go to my mom's and help her move in Canada and everything else, but I'm fully ready to talk and discuss.
I enjoyed it. It, not quite at the level I was expecting to.
Yeah.
Just because I think I built it up in my head a little too much. But I really did enjoy it. I think Abrams did a good job directing in terms of doing something that was a large scale feature film. I didn't detect anything that was a rookie mistake or anything that
sticks out as bad. What about the writing and the story?
Pretty good.
Anything's better than that last one, I would
think. Yeah, and it really highlights how bad Mission Impossible 2 was. Yep. That was just horrendous. No, this was pretty good. And I think I'm being a little too harsh now and giving it a
week. It got pretty good reviews.
Oh, yeah. And everyone was very praiseworthy. God, that's horrible phrasing. Everyone was very...
Well, the critics seemed to give it props. They said, this is a pretty good movie. This delivers on what it set out to deliver, certainly better than the last one. So did you notice that it made like $50 million domestically, $110 million internationally?
Philip Seymour Hoffman was very good.
Oh, okay.
I want to see him. I'm watching him being a complete badass. You know, you got a girlfriend, you got a wife. I'm gonna hurt her. I'm gonna kill you in front of her. I mean, the stuff that was in the trailer. He's so badass. I mean, I'm watching him do this, and I'm thinking, Brandt can't watch though, or he has to pay $100 from the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And just what a great actor. What great range. Actor. Anyway, you want okay?
What
so
about,
you want to talk
about
the,
Felicity? How is she?
Carrie Russell, hot.
See,
not in the movie enough.
See, that's what I like about J.J. Abrams. Not only is he a cool guy, but he is obviously very loyal. So he has people that he brings back.
Yeah, you know, and that one guy whose name I can't remember, but I don't think I've ever known his name. Well, but he's been in like everything he's done.
There's stuff like
he was
that.
He was the pilot in Lost that got eaten.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
he was in Alias for a while. And
I honestly love that. I love it when I see a director that really is loyal to certain people. And I just think that's cool. I think that it speaks volumes about them. So when I heard Carrie Russell's, I was going, you know, I haven't seen Carrie Russell much else. She was really good in Felicity, very talented. And he was saying, God, I have the capability of making a $200 million movie. Carrie Russell deserves to get a chance to be in this, and she won't any other way. And I get the feeling he made sure she was in that movie. And I thought, cool, good for him.
Well, she did a good job.
Good.
Did a
good.
Very good job. So you want to talk about the whole...
Well, so this movie made $48 million domestically, and apparently that was a huge disappointment. Apparently it needed to make at least $60 million for them to feel comfortable, and the last one did it. And did you see the new Entertainment Weekly?
No.
Okay, cover story, cover picture. It's of Tom Cruise, and it says something like the effect of the $100 million man. Is he worth $100 million? Because that's how much he made on his last movie. Okay, Because that's how much he made from War of the Worlds.
Because he does back-end deals now.
Exactly. So this is the point. So they do this article where they say, where they're so they compare how much he made per movie. And it shows that he, and it was simply the most unfair thing I've ever seen ever. I am not a Tom Cruise defender. I think he's a nut in his personal life. But my God, the guy, his last movie was War of the Worlds. Okay. And War of the Worlds internationally made $600 million. And how much did he take up front? Zero. He said, if the movie tanks, I won't make anything. And if it does well, I'll make $100 million, which is what he made. I think that shows integrity on his part. And he's willing to do it. So what did they do in Entertainment Weekly? How much did they say War of the Worlds made? They said he made $100 million, but War of the Worlds only brought in $237 million. Because they conveniently left out the $350 million it made internationally. They only listed the domestic grosses to kind of make it look like he's taken way too much money. And then they, and
boy,
then they,
you're all riled up.
Well, can does that strike you as fair at all to the guy?
Well, I haven't read the article.
They're creating this whole backlash. They're saying that, and they're trying to imply that, you know, people are gonna, they're saying, but Tom Cruise, this may be the movie MI, you know, three, that where there's going to be the backlash, he's acting too crazy. But, and they start listing all these things like him jumping up and down an Oprah or anything that all happened. They seem to forget before his last movie came out, before War of the Worlds came out, that just happened to be the biggest hit he's ever been in the history of his career. $600 million movie. So to me, it's like there's no backlash. And now people are saying, oh, this movie didn't do well. It's the backlash. And I'm thinking, it's not a backlash. It's because Mission Impossible 2 sucked. It really sucked. And I think it took the wind out of people's sails to some extent.
Let me, a couple of things. I'm not going to defend Entertainment Weekly's use of the numbers.
Yeah.
Although it should be noted, anytime you talk about movie numbers, who knows? Because reported budgets and how they work the deals and what's a profit and what isn't is so convoluted.
But these are the accepted numbers of the ones that everybody, I mean, I know they're convoluted, but these are accepted numbers. We know exactly how much Tom Cruise made from it, and we know what its domestic and its international box office take was. So they decided they're going to talk about Tom.
I understand what you're saying.
But here, 2 pages later, they decide, now let's go over all the other players and see how much they're worth. So who's making too much? Who's making a bargain for how much they're getting? Like Reese Witherspoon is a bargain and she's making this much. Julie Roberts is maybe overpaid. So they're going all over them. And in those pages, what do? They talk about their international box office. They say Brad Pitt. Sure, Brad Pitt doesn't do that well here, but he's a megastar internationally. Troy made
it
5 times as
much.
It
sounds like you should write a letter to the editor.
So, well, it just doesn't seem fair that, like, they're saying they're using one set of standards for Brad Pitt, but not one for Tom Cruise. I don't know.
So it would appear, again, I haven't
read
the article.
Okay, I'm a Scientologist. There, are you happy?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Not sure what's going on there.
Well, I'm defending Tom Cruise. What can I say?
And Abrams, who,
it's the smile,
the director Abrams who did this, we talked a while back, Paramount gave him the next Star Trek film.
Yeah.
And it came out, he was writing and directing it, and it was going to be the prequel set at Starfleet Academy, Kirk Meeks Spock. And then like a week after that came out, he gets on the net, and he's pissed, and he's like, I don't know where that came from. I'm somehow attached to the project, but we haven't picked a director yet. We haven't done anything yet. We haven't decided on a story. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. Where did all that come from, by the way? It sounds like somebody with a lot of supposition.
So, you know, it's one of those, and you know, I got it off Dark Horizons, yeah. And I forget where they probably got it off Trek Web or something.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a testament to how this stuff flies around and gains credibility.
Well, it's things like that. It's like you instantly go, wow, J.J. Abrams, what a great idea. So you get excited.
Well, he didn't deny that he's not doing a Star Trek film. Just what kind of film and what capacity he's doing it is apparently not as firm as was believed. Or he just got pissed that idea number one was outed and maybe he wants to now change gears. It's one of those things you never know.
Which would be so stupid, because it's not like he's going to keep it a secret. That would be too bad if he got mad.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's cause for him to get as upset as he got, apparently.
Yeah, he was ticked.
So I kind of thought that was interesting. And I hope that the perceived take of Mission Impossible 3, you know, in terms of what they expected to do, I hope that doesn't cause Paramount to lose faith in Abrams. I hope they keep their faith in Abrams and let him do whatever he wants with Star Trek.
Yeah, obviously, whatever success of this movie has very little to do with him. He delivered, for by all accounts, a winning movie.
If you start, once you start looking to point fingers and, oh my God, this isn't going to make what we wanted it to make,
yeah,
you know, you're going to point your fingers at the person.
Oh, that untested director.
The least powerful person, and it ain't going to be Cruise.
Speaking of that, go ahead.
I should say our good buddy Wells, Jeffrey Wells, was writing that he had heard from some people, just informal, anecdotally, they had no interest in Cruise anymore. Like, the women were like, I have no interest in Tom Cruise anymore because they think he's a nutbag. And maybe that just hadn't percolated through enough for War of the Worlds to be affected. Maybe it actually is having an effect.
It could be. As a guy who's not interested in him in other ways, I've enjoyed almost every movie he's ever been in. I can think of few movies that I didn't enjoy.
Did you enjoy Days of Thunder?
You know, when I say almost, that was the
qualifier. I say that like I can remember Days of Thunder.
Oh, it was awful. I remember the tagline. The tagline was "Cruise like thunder," and it was, which was horrible. and it was way before NASCAR hit it big. But the thing was, is this was gonna be the big summer movie, and it being like the eighth biggest movie of the summer, but it was supposed to be the big one, and it was totally high concept. It was almost like an Oliver Stone directed movie. You know, it's sort of like everything was too big. Speaking of that, Entertainment Weekly issue, letters to the editor, they had like, I think, two letters that both addressed the cover of the last issue with Superman on the cover.
Oh, really?
And one of them went to huge tasks for the same thing I flipped out over, with that ridiculous perma, you know, cowlick that he had on his head, and how crazy that was.
I don't have a problem with the spit curl.
It was too perfect. It looked like rubber, and that was their problem. That was the same thing I had. And then another person said, boy, I'm just getting a sinking feeling about this movie. You know, which, by the way, I saw the new preview for that Superman.
What a fantastic segue into another item
to
on
me,
the list.
It immediately, you know, made me happy again. I was looking at this and going, oh, good. This movie's going to be good. I got all excited again because of it. And I started to realize, wow, it really is moving on of the Superman movies of the 70s. It really is. This is not X-Men and these kind of superhero movies. It's sort of a melange of them. And I got unbelievably excited watching this preview again.
Well, and I didn't react quite as strongly as you did. I thought it was a good preview, a good trailer. I really liked Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey is the whacked out bad guy.
Yep.
I love that. That's great. But the stuff that they showed rang true. You know, none of it to me rang false or gave me a groaner moment. You had talked about how you were stoked about hearing the theme. I thought they could have done a little bit better job incorporating the theme, actually, because I thought that as the trailer is ending and it's, you know, showing you the logo and then the credits, there's like a couple of horn stings.
It just shocked me because I kind of forgot. I kind of didn't realize how much of the first movies they're bringing into that. And the theme, I just, honestly, it didn't occur to me they were going to use that. So I was like, oh my God, that's the theme. I got kind of excited, you know, but I don't know.
I wanted the theme to be a little more emphasized, a little more of the, have that be the crescendo. Instead, it was sort of like two thirds of the way through. And then
I think for me, I'm just building up this movie hugely because I love Superman and I really love those movies when I was a kid. And I just am so excited about this thing that maybe I'm building up to it. I don't know if you read on Ain't It Cool News Today. There's a new documentary about Superman. I think mostly the TV series and the movies. And it's a documentary where they interview all the people that participate in all these movies and TV series. And I was reading that going, oh, that sounds so cool too. It was like a documentary all about Superman on film and TV. So I'm just getting really stoked about this.
That's
in a
cool
way that I know that X-Men is going to completely and utterly disappoint me. I know it's going to blow
big
chunks.
A new version of a trailer or something. I saw something new.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is new or I just hadn't seen it before. I'm sort of backing. You're going more negative and I'm becoming more neutral.
Oh, it's going to be awful. I want it to not be, but it's going to be so awful.
The last thing I saw, if I didn't know Brett Ratner was the director, I wouldn't have had a problem with the trailer at all.
I'll tell you right now, Brett Ratner has directed numerous movies where the trailers looked great. He knows how to shoot things that you can cut into a great trailer.
Oh,
it's the movies he makes that are horrible.
And I'm not.
You know what a really great trailer was? That,
well, I know, Richard.
That Hannibal Lecter thing that he did, the Red Dragon. Great trailer.
I don't remember that at all.
Horrible movie.
Never saw the movie. Don't remember if I saw the trailer.
Who gave this guy the Hannibal Lecter franchise?
Anyway, I understand what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from. But I'm some of this, it hasn't, I don't know.
Maybe I don't want to be disappointed, so I'm so setting my standards so low that I can't help but it beat them, so I won't have any ability to be disappointed. So you will have, if you're neutral, you will have the ability to be disappointed.
That's true.
And I will have no ability. There's no chance I can be disappointed by this movie. Maybe that's what I'm doing to myself.
Could be. I just thought it was interesting that I find myself becoming a little more neutral, a little more give it a chance. It's going to be, you know.
Well, I haven't seen the new trailer, so maybe I should look at it and see.
And it's not too far away. It's like 2 weeks away.
I'm definitely looking forward to Kelsey Grammer. I love the guy. And I think he might be great as this one. Although I've seen some of the stuff of Vinnie Jones and he looks weird to me. I don't know.
Well, that's a hard character to bring to the screen. Cause in the comic book, the Juggernaut is a huge guy with a really bizarre looking sort of leather getup with this hat that would look, it's like a soup bowl hat that would look ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's a hard one to bring to the screen. It's like tailor made for Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh yeah.
Huge, just bulky, whatever.
Yeah.
Another new trailer this week was Bond, Casino Royale.
I didn't even realize that was coming. I got so excited when I saw that. They seem to be doing it the way I want them to do it. You know, it's like the real Bond. Like if he was a realer guy. I mean, there was the gadgets, but it just seemed real. I think this guy is going to be awesome. I don't know why people are. I don't know what's going on with these people that are like trying to have some internet campaign against him. He looks so great in the role. I mean, I don't
Sounds
know.
Sounds like you
I'm
have a man crush there.
Well, you know, what can I say?
All right. Clearly, you took that farther than I wanted you to.
I mean, doesn't the guy look great in the movie?
I think he does look good. I think the movie looks very promising from the trailer. I mean, I didn't need the trailer to convince me of that. I trust the director because I really enjoyed
Who's directing it again?
The guy who did GoldenEye.
Oh, yeah.
Stuart Baird or no?
Yeah, something like that. Nah, yeah. No, it's not Stuart Baird, but it's somebody like that. Yeah.
Whoever it was that did GoldenEye that was very good. So this, I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah.
And it was a cool trailer. First half was in black and white.
Yeah.
Quite sure. And then, it's pretty cool.
It was. I was like all excited because I just didn't expect it. I kind of thought they hadn't even been filming. I didn't realize they're filming the thing. So
now we're kind of bouncing all over topic wise. Star Wars DVDs. Go to town, my friend.
Oh, sweet. That is like the absolute greatest thing that George Lucas could have ever done. And I am shocked that he's doing this. George Lucas is allowing the original Star Wars movies to be released on DVD, the unmessed with versions of them.
And, you know, I read that and I thought, I probably won't buy them. The only thing he did.
That's a good point. Now that I'm thinking about it, I probably won't buy him either. I'm just so glad he's doing it. That's actually a totally good point. Because, of course, I have his cleaned up versions. But the fact that they're out there is so great.
Really, the only thing he did that was irritating to me was the Greedo shoots first. That was stupid. But beyond that, you know, I'm fine with him cleaning stuff up if he wants. If he wants to add in new scenes, fine. I mean, I understand why people are upset, you know, because it's screwing, you know, you are changing the original film. And people want to see the original film. I totally understand that. I think it's great that he's letting them out there so people can choose and people can stop being upset and worked up about it. On the other hand, my feeling is they're his films. He can really do whatever he wants to them, and everyone else can just sit down and shut up.
Well, of course, you're exactly right. But the thing is, I mean, I've looked at some of those again, and I look at some of these scenes where he populates it with all this stuff that just does not fit in. with the, it just doesn't really fit to me. And I'll have
to watch them again because I haven't seen them recently. And
like when they're on Tatooine and they're going into what's the town? Is it Mos Eisley? Is that the town?
Yeah.
So they're going in there and all of a sudden you're seeing these things hop by and people doing little things in the background that it just was never there and it doesn't feel right. And I'm sure that might've been in his original vision. It just doesn't really look right.
It's, if you look at the last three films or the prequels, he does love to do that. He loves scenes that are full of crap going on.
I agree.
And it's really irritating.
It
because
is.
Because it's so distracting. You can tell like 90% of the stuff that's going on is George Lucas saying, we need him talking, have him look like he's doing something. And it looks fake. There's so much going on. It draws attention to itself and it looks fake. It doesn't look like authentic background action.
Well, exactly. And with the original Star Wars, it looked to me even worse because it wasn't really there. But
right. Because he wasn't able to pollute the screen as much as he wanted to the first go around. So in terms of doing that, that's the thing he does that I hate the most.
The only thing that concerns me about this is people forget he did the digital cleanup originally in 97. So he decided we're going to create new transfers we can base everything off of. So we're going to clean these things up digitally. And the first thing he did was he released all of those films, the cleaned up versions on, this is before DVD, released them on tape. So I still have the tape of all of the cleaned up where he cleaned up them as clean as possible. But then they went to town and it's my understanding they cleaned them up again. But what we're getting now is the digital cleanup circa 1997. So they're not doing it. They're not using the newer cleanup version, but pre effects version. So hopefully there is clean looking. The one thing I loved about watching those DVDs, when the effects versions came out was that they looked so pristine. I mean, it looked beautiful and I'm hoping these look as pristine just without all the effects. And I'm worried that we're getting a lesser version. But then again, like you pointed out, until you pointed that out, it occurred to me, I'm almost certainly not going to buy these things because there's no reason to, but I sure love the fact that he's doing it. It just shows to me that Lucas, to some extent, is willing to listen to his fans. Fans that really want to see what they saw the first time they went to see it in 1977.
So, flying to Hawaii,
yeah,
I was treated to an in-flight movie. Flying there, it was Nanny McPhee.
Oh, sweet Lord.
Now, my position in the flight cabin, if you will, which was about seven rows back in coach,
yeah,
I was able to see Nanny McPhee on seven different screens.
Nice.
Are you jealous?
Were you able to avoid
Are
it?
Are you jealous, my friend?
I am clearly
not
jealous.
Oh, my goodness. Between, there was a drop, a hanging from the aisle ceiling, two of those I could see. There were the three bulkheads, monitors I could see. And then, so that's five. And then two I could see into the first class cabin. Oh, my God. Every time I looked,
did it get better? The fact that you could see it on so many screens,
you know it.
Did that make it seven times better?
Oh God, it was like heaven. Every time I looked up from my book, it was the exact. It was fascinating actually. Every time I looked up from my book, it was the same scene. It was the same shot of Emma Thompson, looking stern into the camera. Honest to God, it was, you know, the children had done something wacky and she's stomping her cane and being stern. And it was the same shot every time I looked up.
Ugh.
Anyway, it
did you remember when they were promoting that movie? They had these weird ads on adult ads because it's a kids movie. But the adult ads, it was like this 30-second behind the scenes of Nanny McPhee. And they would show Emma Thompson. So and it occurred to me later that she looks so damn freaky in this movie that adults wouldn't even recognize it's her. So they had to like interview her about the movie just so we could go, oh, that's that gal I remember from Pride and Prejudice 10 years ago or something. Who knows what? So I felt bad because I like Emma Thompson, but it was like, that was the tenuous little star power they had going for that movie.
And you know, more power to her because she like produced it herself. And if it made a profit, I'm happy for her.
I like her a lot. What was the movie coming back?
Last Holiday.
Which one was that?
Queen Latifah.
Oh, I wanted to see that. It looked kind of fun. Was it bad? Maybe the trailer. It had a really good trailer.
Yeah, I didn't bother taking my head. Why do airlines charge $5 for a headset?
I know. It's just it should be illegal.
It's not a special headset.
In the old days, it was. Remember they had the little plug-in
the air, when it was an air tube thing.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, it's been any Walkman headset can plug in from the past, what,
they charge $5 for a rental of a headset that you can buy for $3 if you want to get ripped off.
So I didn't I left my headphones plugged into the iPod, but and so I was listening to podcasts and watching Last Holiday, nice. Which was quite fascinating. I don't really think I missed much.
Yeah,
I mean it looked okay.
Yeah,
I remember we talked about the trailer when it came out.
It looked good, but it got bad reviews though.
It looked decent. You know, it looked okay. Clearly not high art.
Yeah.
I was interested to see what they did with the ending because in the original film,
what was it based on again?
A film with Alec Guinness.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't remember if it was the same title. Spoiler warning. He goes through the film thinking he's going to die because he's got this disease.
That's right.
Finds out, you know, goes wild, lives like there's no tomorrow.
Yep.
Finds out he doesn't have the disease and then gets hit by a car.
Oh, really?
That's the original film.
Wow, that's a bitter ending.
No kidding.
Holy there's no, geez.
And I'm thinking, there's no chance.
God, why would they even do that?
Dude, that's great.
It is awesome, but it like stuns me.
It'd piss off your date if it was a date film. Exactly. But what a great idea. But you're thinking, there's no way they're going to do that.
Yep.
And they did probably the opposite of that for this one. Which it's kind of like, oh, what could have been? Anyway, it looked perfectly acceptable. Looked like a perfectly harmless movie. I'm, you know, happy for everyone involved. Although that 70s girl chick.
Oh, the Laura Prepon?
Yeah. She's
hot.
I think she was in it. I remember thinking that was it, but that name doesn't. I don't remember if I saw that. Anyway, she was. There were some scenes where she was mostly naked. That was
nice.
That was.
That's always a comfortable feeling.
Like she's in
the
bath. She's getting a back rub, and you know that went over well. That I could see on six screens.
Nice.
Yeah. So, okay, we have. So I one more holiday entertainment related thing.
Sure.
Went to the island of Kauai, which is the Garden Island. It's the probably the most unplugged of the main islands. It's like one road that doesn't even connect the whole thing. It's like a horseshoe shape.
Yep.
And so everything over there is about how laid back it is. You know, all your tour guides, the pace of life here is so awesome and this and that. And, you know, don't even lock my door. Don't even have a key to my rental house. And you're like, okay.
Thank you. Where do you live again? Because I'll be paying that.
Well, clearly there's nothing there worth taking.
Oh, okay.
And nowhere to go if you took it, which I'm sure is the real driving factor. So, you know, the guy's like, you know, I don't ever watch TV. You know, don't ever do that. And you're starting to think, oh, God, I'm so sick of these people that don't ever watch TV. And they get all high and mighty. And then the guy's like, except for The Daily Show.
And immediately, he's the cool guy.
Oh, God bless you, Jon Stewart. Oh, and I still have all week's worth of Daily Shows on my dish PVR system that I have.
Yeah, I've
got
it. I did the iPod thing. I subscribed to it and I love it.
Which ties us into the Colbert Report. And while I was gone, Stephen Colbert hosted the journalist's dinner in Washington, D.C. The press corps. What's the official name for it?
The Washington Press Corps. No, Correspondents' Dinner.
Correspondents' Dinner. Yeah. Which is.
It's every year. It's like the correspondents get together to have a dinner where they have the president there and they basically make fun of him. And it's this bipartisan affair. And they always have a comedian host it. And sometimes it's a political comedian. Sometimes it's just a general one and they have skits. And the president always does something. It's the one where 2 years ago, Clinton famously made a joke like he was
2 years ago. Clinton.
Sorry. 2 years ago, Bush made a joke where he was like looking around the Oval Office.
Last year. I don't know if that was two.
No,
years
it
ago.
Was 2 years ago for the Whatever. WMDs. It was he was like lifting up things going, not here, not there, looking for WMDs. And later people pointed out it took a while for people to realize, actually, that's kind of offensive because that was the entire reason.
People who weren't there immediately thought it was offensive. The correspondents that were there.
That's what I mean.
It was
exactly. But it took a while for it to like gain some traction. And then there was all these families of soldiers and other. But so last year they almost didn't even touch on it. And then this year Colbert hosted it and Colbert, he's an ironist. He does irony. And it's actually often not laugh out loud funny, but it's almost always brilliant.
Did you read or see his speech?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the funny thing.
I actually read it while I was in Hawaii. I found a link to it and I read it and I laughed out loud quite a bit.
Oh, it's incredible. But I'm telling you though, presented live, it went over for the most part poorly. It didn't do well. And it was a combination of, it's the kind of thing that, oh, that's brilliant, as opposed to laugh out loud, and a combination of a audience that was fully unprepared for such an all out frontal and, you know, backwards assault on Bush. I mean, it was.
Well, and themselves.
Exactly. It was biting to the nth degree. And oh my God, it was absolutely stunning.
It was hysterical. And all I can think of is, what did you think was going to happen? Have you watched the Colbert Report? Well, has anybody watched? What did they think was going to happen?
Apparently people that hired him didn't think it that through that closely. So, you know, what's funny is they have on YouTube, they have a something where they've isolated Bush's reaction lifetime through the whole thing. And he just gets madder and madder and madder.
I'm surprised he's smart enough to understand he's being made fun of, quite honestly.
And the irony is, at the show, Bush came up and he had some Bush impersonator that was with him, and Bush killed. He did well. He had good material. He killed. But anyway, I just thought it was really interesting. And I thought, oh, and the media takes on it later were just incredible. But from the leftist liberals going, why isn't everybody talking about how brilliant Colbert was, to conservatives attacking him, how unpatriotic it was. I mean, it's just really interesting. But man,
seen his show? He waves a flag. He's a mega American. He's Lincoln-esque.
His truthiness was just on fire that night. It was really brilliant. And as you said, reading it is actually even more powerful than seeing it. Reading it, you're stunned. You're going, Bush was 5 feet away from him when he was saying this. It was like 20 minutes long. It was incredible.
And anyway, it's actually, I've been warming more to the Colbert Report lately.
You get into it, you know?
And it's one of those things where it's like, oh God, I don't have time for another TV show to watch. But more and more, it's sneaking in there.
It did for me. I mean, it was hard to watch the first couple of times, but once I got in the rhythm, I know what to expect. I know where he's going. I love his take on stuff, and I love it. I mean, it's just perfect. And it's interesting to see him interview left-wing and right-wing authors and his take on this. And what's funny is sometimes, even though he's playing a false conservative, sometimes he actually asks pretty good conservative questions that some of the liberals are actually completely unprepared for. And I'm thinking, dang, I want to hear what they say to that. And I actually kind of appreciate that.
And that's actually, both he and Jon Stewart, are one thing they're not good at is follow through.
Yeah.
And I notice it more with Jon Stewart because I see The Daily Show more, but he'll ask an incisive question and the guest will be, they'll be floored. Like, they didn't expect a serious question, or they didn't expect an intelligent question.
Yeah.
And instead of Stewart pressing them on it, he immediately asks a softball.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You know, it's not Stewart's job to really interrogate people. He's a fake news show host. Yeah. And his job is to be entertaining. And so you can't be cranky with him because he asked a serious question.
Yeah.
And then followed it up with a softball without pressing them on it. But I've noticed that happens a lot.
Bill Maher on HBO, you know, that real time, where he's good at that. He'll be very funny, but if he's going to press some guy, he will press him. Bill Maher is in some ways the equivalent of Jon Stewart. It's almost too bad he's on HBO because nobody sees him much anymore. But anyway,
let's see what's going on. Poseidon opens next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
Hopefully,
that.
Hopefully, maybe we can see that before we record our next episode.
Let's plan on that.
There was actually a preview tonight.
Yeah.
KSW.
Oh, good. I'm glad they're doing previews.
KSW was doing one, but I just could not manage to get any tickets for us.
Damn.
Sorry, dude.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that.
You said
Wolfgang Peterson.
You mentioned earlier the Munich DVD was coming out.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about that.
I could care less.
That was a great movie.
I'm not saying it wasn't a good movie.
I would go so far as to say it's a brilliant movie, and I would say it's one of Spielberg's very, very best movies.
And that could very well be. I just don't, for whatever reason, I don't need to see it again.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm not compelled to
see it. I don't either.
Not from a sense of awkwardness like Schindler's List, where I don't want to see it again because I don't want to be confronted with the horror presented in that movie. And that's why I don't want to see it. At Munich, it has nothing to do about that. It has to do with I don't feel compelled to see it.
Well, for me, I like totally into the subject matter. So yeah. I'm into that. But I would never, I rarely ever buy Spielberg DVDs unless there's a whole lot of extras, because he simply doesn't do commentary tracks. And I hate that. But I bought E.T. because it had tons of extras. I bought Jaws, tons of extras. But like even movies I really liked, I love Minority Report. There's nothing on that thing. War of the Worlds. Love that movie. I don't know why some people are mezzo. I thought the movie was great. But again, why buy a DVD? For me, I'm buying the DVDs for added experience, and they offer nothing. But this movie in particular, because of the subject matter, and I'll bet you there's going to be some cool links on it. Either way, I'm definitely going to buy it.
Okay. Very cool. HD DVD is in the world. It's in the wild, if you will.
Yeah.
Apparently Toshiba sold out of the initial, I think it was 10,000 units.
Wow. How much are they charging for them?
$500.
That's
and
not bad.
Multiple stories of people going to Best Buy or wherever and trying to see a demo unit and they're not there. Wow. Or, I mean, A, they're sold out and they're like, okay, well, can I see a demo? No, we sold it too.
God, that's crazy that they're letting them sell their demo units.
Well,
man.
It sounds like there's a lot of people asking and saying, well, you know, why are you sold out? They weren't supposed to go on sale today. Oh, well, there wasn't a strict on sale date, so we sold them as soon as the shipment came in. Or if there's a display up, they're not showing an HD DVD in it. Which is more a testament to the retardedness of big box retail. But
I went to Circuit City and I was flipping through and I go, what the hell is this? And I realized that's an HD DVD. I was like, I hadn't seen it. It was for Million Dollar Baby, and that was one of the first ones they put out.
One of the first three.
Yeah, and I was, well, I think I saw more than that out there.
Well, I think there's more now. The first batch was Million Dollar Baby, Last Samurai, and Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
And then, like, almost right after that was Serenity.
Yeah,
and it was interesting.
That's right.
I was listening to the Penny Arcade podcast, the aptly titled Downloadable Content.
Yeah.
They were talking about how the first three are $25, but Serenity, $30. Like, you know why? Nerd tax.
Yeah.
Because they know anyone buying an HD DVD player first week is probably a Serenity fan. And then the whole thing's a nerd tax. Anyway, I thought it was really interesting,
the case factor, because they know the discs are the same physical size, basically, as a DVD or a CD. So they had to come up with a case that would be different enough that people aren't going to get it confused in their collections, but they couldn't make it bigger because there's so many things that are sized. Like, people have created bookcases and stuff that are sized to a DVD. So they had to make it smaller, but it had to be able to fit stuff. So they came up with this thinner, smaller kind of case that, honestly, I'm looking at this going, you know, often there's a lot of stuff that they fill in DVD cases that I really like, and I'm not so sure they're going to fill them with that. And I'm not sure. It seemed like not the greatest case in the world, but it's probably the best thing they could do under the circumstances, because they had to make it different. It was sort of like when they came out with those high definition CDs, you know, the 5.3 versions or whatever, 5.1 surround sound CDs. They had to make a bigger case so people wouldn't confuse them with regular CDs. They put this thinking in it. But anyway, I just was surprised. It looks kind of like lesser than a regular DVD.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if, because if you look at something like an Xbox game, same form factor, same case, but it's a green plastic.
Yeah,
and there's no mistaking my shelf of Xbox games from the shelves of DVDs.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, you've got control over the Xbox cases, so you've got multiple studios, so you couldn't probably all agree on one color, but I don't know. Maybe they could have agreed on something that wasn't quite that weird.
Well, I definitely look forward to, boy, $500. I didn't realize they were going to start out that cheap, and boy, that is so within the realm of money I have. So, I was thinking I wouldn't be basically I'm a just behind the cut, the bleeding edge. I am definitely a almost first adopter, but at that rate, that's like not much more than an
iPod.
Depending
on the technology, me too.
So I, boy, that's not bad at all. And it seems to me clearly, despite everything, HD DV is the one that's going to win out.
Well, we'll see, because this is the week of E3, and yesterday Sony had their big announcement for PlayStation 3.
November.
Where finally, it's coming out in November.
Yep.
Two different prices, 400 and, no, 500 and 600?
No, 400, 500. I know, I'm pretty sure one is 400. Not really sure.
Wait for us to do research.
I may be wrong, but I was pretty sure one was four. But the thing that sucks about the one that is cheaper is it doesn't have HDMI output, meaning...
I thought it was HDCP.
Oh, I'm not really sure, but meaning it's not going to effectively be able to show high def for that. And I'm thinking that's a ripoff because that doesn't cost them that much to implement.
But if you spend the extra money... In addition to the larger hard drive, you get a memory stick port.
Memory stick. Yes, Sony and their ridiculous legacy forces.
Anyway, but the whole point of mentioning this is that it's a Blu-ray player. Even if you don't use it to play video games, it's a Blu-ray player for $400, $500, $600, whatever the hell it is that we clearly couldn't be bothered to research properly. And they're hoping that will drive Blu-ray adoption.
I just can't wait for the day they release it, because isn't that basically the day that Halo 3 comes out?
No, Halo 3 announced today, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
As I'm busy trying to do my work, I'm like hitting refresh on the Microsoft press conference blogs. Halo 3 is coming out in 2007.
Oh, so they're not going to, well, they just couldn't get it in time.
God, and you go to the Bungie webpage, it was hysterical. And they're like, Bungie, literally the headline was, Bungie shocks world with announcement of Halo 3. And it's really funny. And the guy's like, I know, you know, clearly we couldn't talk about anything, even though Bill Gates has announced it like four times. And now Bill Gates said Halo 3 was going to be available the day that the PlayStation 3 was. And then they backed off of that. They're like,
is that because is it like a political reason, or is it because they're just not going to be ready with the product?
The reason they backed off?
Yeah.
Probably because they're not going to be ready.
Okay.
Clearly they want to ship it as soon as possible. They make so much frigging money off of Halo anything that it's insane. And the sooner they make that money, the better for everyone.
But you know, the one that makes the most money is that damn World of Warcraft. They have 6 million regular users that are paying, what is it, $15 a month to log on. So you're talking about, what's that, six? So that's like $90 million a month.
I'm not going to verify Richard's numbers. I have a liberal arts degree. If I could do math, I'd have a much higher paying
job. We're talking about $1 billion a year in just people logging onto their ridiculous site. That is unbelievable. $1 billion for a game to just to log on. That is the money machine
people
and all money machines.
Love that thing.
Oh, I know. It's great. They're getting their money's worth, but holy Jesus.
I have never played
amount.
One of those massive role-playing games. And I have some friends that do off and on. And one of them said, I beat World of Warcraft the other day. Or I had beaten World of Warcraft, and then I started playing again. I kind of look at him like, what do you mean you beat it? And he's like, well, you beat it when you stop playing.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was like, oh, well, I've never played it at all, so I beat it the most. And he looked, you're a lucky man.
Maybe it's just me, but I'm not into interactivity. I don't want to go online and play against other people. I like playing the thing they
do. Well, more and more people are becoming used to that type of a game.
I know. I just don't like it. That's why I like Grand Theft Auto and stuff. It's just me in the world. I'm not really into other people I don't know and little kids fragging me, and I'm just not into that. But some people are. I know most people are. It just ain't me.
Anyway, it's just interesting. We've got Blu-ray out in November.
Yep.
Assuming there isn't some other delay, because Sony does not have its act together by and large.
No.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens with the whole format war.
Yeah.
We've talked about the format word of death, though. I'm not sure there's much more we can milk out of it at this point.
I'm a Microsoft guy. I say HD DVD is going to, isn't that their one? Doesn't that the way
that's,
support,
that's
they
the
agnostic?
One they're backing.
Yeah.
Because I think the stated reason was it's copyright protection scheme is better formed, or there was some loophole that Blu-ray hadn't addressed yet. And so that was their reason for backing HD DVD.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft's not stupid. If HD DVD completely fails, yeah, they'll back the winner. It's not in Microsoft's interest to not.
Yeah, but they're just a supporting player.
Anyway, you know, the last, and this is completely, where are we on time?
49.
Okay. I wrote this down as pretty much unconnected to anything except maybe X3. I read an article on the flight over about Marvel, and they've done this thing, and this isn't new news, but they're doing this thing where they're forming their own, they're making their next few comic book movies themselves. They're not licensing it to Sony the way they did with Spider-Man.
So they're going to finance it themselves? And,
yes.
Wow.
And the reason is, the Spider-Man movies have made billions for Sony. Marvel has pulled in from, I can't remember if it was Spider-Man 2 or both films. I think it was both. Spider-Man has pulled in $75 million for Marvel.
So they just had a bad deal, basically.
Well, yeah, and I'm not sure I think that was the standard licensing deal. They're looking at, they're not going to get a much better deal to renegotiate.
But what characters do they have it's like there's kind of diminishing returns when you're pulling out.
Well,
these...
that's sort of what I wanted to talk about because, well, they've done X-Men and they did a really good job with that. Actually, let's back up even further. There were some Spider-Man movies out. Those might have been made for TV 70s.
The TV show.
No.
Oh, I don't remember.
Maybe
movies.
It was a show.
Well, no,
I remember a live-action Spider-Man thing.
Yeah, there was the there was a TV show. It was like in the late 70s.
Why did I think that was a movie? Yeah, who cares? I'm dumb.
Pretty bad.
They filmed a Captain America movie. It was like a Roger Corman.
Oh yeah,
like a B grade. I remember seeing
famously bad.
I remember seeing the posters for it. Like it was the Shield.
Yeah.
And it was on the track to being released when somebody said, no, and they pulled it and it was never released. And now you can buy bootlegs at comic book conventions.
Well, and then there was the Fantastic Four.
They did a Fantastic Four
that was done.
That was even closer to being released.
But it wasn't Fantastic Four one done specifically so they could continue to keep the rights to the movie. There was no intention of releasing
it. That I don't remember. No, I think it was on the path to be released. The actors were going around doing press for it.
But my understanding was they literally filmed it because if they didn't, they would lose an option to continue to have the rights to it or something.
I think it was, I don't know.
It's sort of why you're going to, whether you like it or not, you're going to see Spinal Tap sometime in the next 2 years because Spinal Tap, in regaining the rights to their name, they have to perform or do something as Spinal Tap at least once every 8 years or something.
See, now while I remember and will back you up on that, there are times when Richard just makes something up and then defends it as if it was God's honest truth. So when I'm
not
backing off of something, there are times when I'll be like,
I heard Christopher
Guest
say it himself.
No, I verify you on the Spinal Tap thing. The Fantastic Four thing, I'm not as sure. Anyway. And then, so X-Men, Blade. Blade was a Marvel film. Nobody wanted to make it. It ended up doing very well cost-benefit-wise.
Yep.
Then X-Men, then Spider-Man, and then clearly the floodgates were opened for Marvel characters. There have been some that have sort of been in development for a while. A Luke Cage film, which is... He's a black superhero and he's invulnerable and strong.
That's one that John Singleton wants to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's an Iron Man film that's been batted around for a while. Tom Cruise was supposedly interested. John Favreau was supposedly directing. And
who's the worst director in Hollywood.
Got put on pause, but I think of the properties that are left, that's probably about the one they can expect to make the most with.
Yeah.
Because they've got some other stuff like Doctor Strange, Namor, who's like an Aquaman guy.
Yeah.
Or not. They've got Hulk 2 they want to do under this arrangement.
Really? So they really? So didn't they didn't doesn't who made the first one? Fox? I can't remember,
but Universal, I think.
Yeah, you're right, Universal. So doesn't Universal have the rights?
Apparently not.
Wow.
A new Captain America.
See, I wonder about that. Captain America to me is such a total prototypical like 50s and 60s kind of hero.
And it's not only that, you have the same problem there that you have with Superman in terms of I mean, the guy's got a shield with the stars and stripes on it. You know, the guy's, it's very primary colors. It's very hard to work that into the real world.
But I think Superman is keep such it comic booky. It's such an enormous character in people's psyche that it overcomes that. Versus Captain America, people just have this vague memory of some guy wearing something.
Unless they go the X-Men route where it's all black leather and... You know, they do away with the primary colors thing, but that's,
but then you can go even overboard on that.
Oh, like, yeah, I completely agree.
I think a lot of the problems with what's the Ben Affleck one, Daredevil, was it was a little too, I don't know. It struck me as a little too moody, dark or whatever. And I'm not so sure maybe not, but I don't know.
Anyway. What else? You have Iron Fist, which is like a kung fu hero of theirs, which I know nothing about, which is sad since I'm the comic book dork. And a few others, but you're right. It's like there are some diminishing returns they're looking at here, and if they're taking all of the risks...
Honestly, I think they're insane for doing that because it is diminishing returns. They know that they can continue to negotiate pretty good deals and I don't know. I just, they could lose so much money on this.
And they
this.
Could because they're not a big company. They are not. DC is owned by Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
So they're not going away.
Yeah.
But Marvel is a much smaller company and cannot afford to take a huge hit. And the way it's structured that I think it was Entertainment Weekly that I read this in, the way the deals, some of the deals are structured, the rights to the characters could be lost. You know, the banks could suddenly own the rights to, I don't know, Iron Man.
Wow, that's like...
Which would be really interesting. Although... Wow.
I mean, if they had some ace in the hole, like, oh, we're doing us, but we've never done Spider-Man, you know, that would have been
thing. And I think Iron Man's probably the most well-known character of the movies they haven't done yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're looking at... You've already shot your most popular characters, Wad... So to speak.
Yeah.
And you really have to wonder who's going to want to see Iron Fist.
That's what that Avi Arad's thinking on that.
Anyway, I'm not sure we're offering much insight aside from just batting it around back and forth.
Well, I think I've decided, I don't know about you, but I think it's a mistake. He shouldn't do it. There's too much of a mistake. In fact, if you add up all the movies, a lot of them have been really poorly received, and it's hard to make money when you're financing movies unless you do every single thing yourself, and even then you end up sharing money. I mean Mel Gibson completely financed The Passion. He made a fortune, but he still had to share that money with distributors and everything else, and he did everything. Invariably, when you self-finance, you're not self-financing, you're getting money from other people yourself. But if they fund it themselves,
yes and no.
And even then, to do it, I mean, Spider-Man, for whatever reason, those movies, they spent $150 million making them things. And to some
making
extent...
Making them things?
Well, my grammar, it's late. It's 10:46 p.m. But I mean, look at some of them, like Fantastic... You haven't seen Fantastic Four yet, but Fantastic Four...
Nope.
It was I actually really enjoyed it, but the level of effects were not quite as good, and apparently they... ended up punching them up even later. Well, when you're financing yourself, you start cutting corners that just start showing in these movies.
Well, God, I remember, and this total digression, I remember somebody making a comment about Battlefield Earth and how they needed some shot, and John Travolta was going to spend $20,000 of his personal money so they could get this one special effects shot.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking that, wow, you really just could have saved your money there, John. I don't think it made a damn bit of difference.
Battlefield Earth. Every time I think about it, I think about poor Barry Pepper, who was in that movie, and I'm thinking...
Well, Forrest Whitaker, too.
Well, exactly. And then again, I think, wow, literally nobody saw that movie. It had no effect on their careers. But every once in a while, I catch a little bit of it on cable and just... You know, some movies, like, it's a bad movie, but there's like a little 2-minute sequence here and there. There's no little 2-minute sequences. There's not a single...
I saw 5 minutes of it once.
It's just an awful, really looks like a low budget, you know, piece of junk.
You know what?
Terrible.
That's something else. People have reported that this is back to Mission Impossible 3. Like, they're standing in line to get tickets, and the person in front of them will buy like 200 tickets.
Really?
A la Scientologists
buying
up Dianetics
to get on the bestseller list.
Yes. So that.
Uh-oh. They're going to go after us now. I've called it a cult. They have the audio reading the software and it discovers the word Scientology in our podcast. And yeah, that's, I had no idea. Where did you hear that? Did you read that? Or
Wells, HollywoodElsewhere.com. Oh, I need to read that.
Wow.
Yeah, somebody wrote in and said it happened at like an arc light in LA.
Clearly it didn't have enough of effect.
Yeah, I, that's bizarre.
See, the thing is with Dianetics is you could do that if you know. In the old days, you could do that because they reported the sales. Only a few bookstores were the ones that they made their, you know, they got the best seller list from. If you figured out those bookstores, you could make those sales. It was like the record company. My uncle, that was his whole job. He would promote records. And you know what he would do?
Smell the glove, baby.
Well, no. His job would be he'd be hired by record companies and they would pay him, and him and his buddies would call up very specific record stores and say, hey, how's that new Kiss album doing? Hey, you need more copies of that Kiss album? How's the Kiss album doing? Is Kiss album doing really good? And then when Billboard would call the record company stores, this is how they do it. Billboard would just call them and say, so what are your top albums this week? Well, the Kiss album's doing pretty good. Whether it's doing good or not, it's on their mind. And that's all they would do. Well, my uncle's, his business ceased to exist the exact day SoundScan came into being. And that's the same thing with books, but that's how Dianetics did it. Well, now if you're talking about going and buying up movie tickets, you literally just have to go buy up a million of them. You can't like go to key theaters. Well,
they did that with Passion of the Christ too, where churches would buy, you know, buy out theaters.
They would
send
people to them though. They would buy it out so they could watch it, weren't they? Or,
all I can, God. And I think about that and I watch the South Park Passion of the Jew.
Yeah, they had that on the other day again.
And when the two kids come out and they're just like, I want our money back. What are you talking about? The Passion is an important film and it's Mel Gibson and it's the story of Jesus Christ. And they're like, no, that was a 2-hour snuff film. I want my money back. And you're just like, wow. Again, South Park has nailed it. Exactly. That was a 2-hour snuff film.
Oh, man. Last week, South Park. Did you see it? Have you seen it yet?
Yes.
The one where they have the dog whisper.
Oh my, and I, you know, driving over, I was thinking about that. I was thinking, you know what? It wasn't even really an offensive South Park, but no.
It was unbelievably well done, though.
It was so, they again have tackled an issue.
Yep.
You know, this twisted child relationship where, yep, you know, you can be a crappy parent and enable your child to be horrible.
Yep.
And they so completely took it down and
perfectly, and they ended it perfectly. Like Cartman's there, and then at the end she realizes she'd rather be an enabler and ask them. It was perfect on every level.
It's like, you know, honestly, it's like they're psychologists and it's all a front. It clearly isn't, but just the times that they can achieve the layers that they do, it's incredible.
It was brilliant, and seeing the way Cartman was being broken down, and then later, like, and it was like a dog. It was unbelievably good. It was, God, it was so good. And you know,
did you catch the Dark Crystal joke?
Yes.
Nanny Skeksis. I fell off the couch. I was laughing so hard.
It's like, everyone's all, they'll throw something like that in for us nerds. And it was like, yay.
Anyway, South Park continues to be brilliant.
Yep. And it won a Peabody a month ago. How cool is that? That they would recognize the quality of the product.
Hot damn.
So we should probably wrap it up. 102.
Hell yes. It is time to go home and go to
sleep.
I
hear the music. How's it go again?
Wow.
Totally different than that.
So, attention podcast listeners, send us your thoughts. You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. And we will discuss your emails in future podcasts.
Absolutely. And now that my life at work has simmered down a little,
maybe you'll actually post these again.
Post and put that goddamn website together so we can put lists.
There's something there.
I know, but
mustardayonnaise.com.
I know, but I
want
to list the links of the things we're going to talk about and stuff like that. So we'll figure it out. But anyway.
We actually need to actually post some of these too.
Okay, that's also my fault too. I had a big event last week.
You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com.
Thanks.
I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to two of you that listen.